Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. We welcome to the studios of CBS Interactive today creative director of radio specialist agency Eardrum, Ralph Van Dyke.
Hello, Tim.
And as usual, Mumbrella deputy editor Robin Hicks.
Hello, Tim.
This week, loud and clear, we discuss the Sirens Awards finalists. CE Go, PR agencies, management reshuffles.
I prefer my salad tossed.
Shameless Philadelphia. How do you measure an agency? Ready, set, go. TV networks prepare for the next part of the 2011 ratings war. So, Ralph, welcome to the podcast. Very good timing with the Sirens shortlist out, and we will talk more about that in a moment. Firstly, though, for those who don't know Eardrum, it's probably just worth explaining what you're all about.
Well, we're a radio specialist, in a nutshell. We half the time are working for advertisers who either have a big radio component to their media spend, and they work with us directly, and we'll create the ads and cast and direct and produce. The other half of the time, we're working with agencies, getting the most out of their ideas, and I guess more like a TV production company would work with them. We direct their spot. You know, they send us a script. We add value to the scripts, cast it. Usually casting is something that isn't really concentrated on much from the agencies. It's a difficult one to work.
Is it quite a small pool of talent that you're working with there? Or?
Not us, no. I mean, that's the problem, because the pool of talent is too small. For a lot of agencies, that it's much easier to cast someone you know and who's been doing the other ad that you've done and, you know, comes into the studio, is very professional. But that's why so many radio ads tend to sound the same, because it's, you know, 5% of the actors are doing 95% of the work. So we tend to spread it out a little more and find weird and wonderful people in comedy venues and amateur dramatic venues and things, weird and wonderful places. Even, you know, guys I play football with have appeared in my team, in our ads.
And yeah. On your team.
And my team.
And Eardrum itself, how did it all start?
Well, I'm a writer, copywriter, so I started in agencies, and I found that the work that I was doing on radio was by far the most enjoyable. It was fastest. I had a very short attention span, so I could conceive the idea, write and produce it in the space of a week as opposed to waiting 2 months. The TV work, and got better at it and won awards for it, and then went to the UK working in agencies for a year, and then a year later set up Eardrum because there was a need for it and there was no one specializing in the medium. The industry itself exploded with new stations, new networks coming on, and there was a demand for it, and we had expertise in a very specific area and thought, why not? And that was how Eardrum started, really.
Now, two perceptions, I suppose. One is that the quality of radio ads isn't as good as other mediums.
Oh, you're very kind.
And the and as I say, it's a perception. You know, I'm open to correction.
No, you're pretty much right.
And the other and the other one is from creatives, is that it's an unglamorous medium for them to be working in, which may link to that first perception.
Well, obviously not worked with Eardrum.
Yeah, I mean, why is it that, you know, clearly, you've seen it and fallen in love with that medium.
Yeah.
What is it that you saw that others haven't?
I think that's probably the potential. I mean, I think you can really move people, you know, both, you know, emotionally and you can get closer to people, really, and the consumer through a great radio ad. There just seems to be an intimacy with the medium that I felt really liberating as a writer. A lot of scope. You know, we can basically any idea can work with sound, in my opinion. And it involved things I love: acting, music, and writing. A lot of comedy. A lot of radio ads are comedy-based. And we did a lot of comedy writing in the UK as well when we first started, just to try and bring some money in. And so that it combined a lot of the elements that I loved. And so we went with it.
Have you ever cast yourself in ads?
I try to avoid it. It's a bit creepy to go, yes, we're the casting specialists, and hey, it's me. I fill in if the budget's a bit low, or as a desperate measure. But I have dabbled. Yes.
And do you find that marketers are championing radio?
More and more so. Yeah, I think that the advertisers seem to really understand the benefits and the potential for the medium. They look at the numbers and they look at how targeted radio can be, and they get it. The media agencies obviously understand the rationale for it, and it appears on a lot of schedules. It can fall after that point because creative is a difficult nut to crack for a lot of agencies, for the radio creative. But I think marketers see the potential and are keen to use it more.
Ralph, what do you make of buyradio.com.au, which launched last month as an advertising showcase to encourage and inform marketers about how to use radio better?
Well, it's just one network, isn't it? I think that's done it. So it's a great showcase for them and to promote the different shows and the different environments that they have available for their for advertisers. So, you know, a car brand, for example, can find the perfect show or perfect environment to promote their particular vehicle, or you know, they could, and environment and context is a big part of what makes, you know, radio successful. So the more appropriate, the more relevant your brand can be to whatever the content is, the better. So I think in that way, it's a really quick, easy way of finding out what the station's got.
Yeah. Do you think it's very necessary? Do you think there's a case that marketers don't perhaps get radio?
Well, there's a lot to get. I mean, if you think of all the networks and all the stations that have got different content at any time of the day, there's an awful lot of information to try and convey. And with the best one in the world, a media agency isn't going to be able to dedicate enough time to be across all networks, you know, across the country. So the easier that is for media agencies and advertisers to get their head around, the better. So, I think it's a good initiative.
Well, let's talk about a few of the pieces of work that Eardrum's been involved in recently. Maybe we'll hear the one for Perth Zoo, first of all.
I couldn't help but noticing when you came in that your eyes are a little...
Soulful? Melancholy?
No, red.
Oh, yeah. I get that a lot.
Really? What do people say?
I know, like, had a bad night.
Oh, that's... I've
been up to no good, Frank.
Oh, look, people can be cruel.
No, it hurts.
Yeah, well, that does look a bit painful.
No, it hurts my feelings.
What actually does cause it, though?
Whenever I had an itchy eye, my mother would always tell me to rub it.
Rub it?
Yeah, rub it.
You should say rub it.
Yeah.
His animal, the red-eyed tree frog. Find your animal at Perth Zoo.
So that was an ad for Perth Zoo. What is it that you like about that one? What was the insight that brought you in that direction?
Well, we worked with the brand agency in Perth on that one, and the campaign was conceived a couple of years ago, and it's just a lovely idea that can only really be done on radio because there's a reveal that you're talking to someone who has a lot of similarities to the animal. And the it's all about casting and the performance, really, that one for me, finding unique voices that and a conversation which you're hearing thinking, what is this about? There's something intriguing and real about this person. I don't quite know what they're talking about. And then the nice reveal at the end. And they're charming. They have a sort of a creature comforts sort of sweetness to them, which I like. The performance is very natural.
Well, another one that I guess is an ongoing campaign you've been involved with for a number of years is with Commercial Radio Australia and selling the messages that that advertising is a good option on radio. Let's hear one of those clips.
He's covered in mud, missing his front teeth and wearing his worst swimmers. But right now...
Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to remind you marketing people that thousands of people are listening to this. They're picturing what she's saying, wondering what product she's talking about and thinking about going to the website. In fact, they're so engaged with what she's saying, 64% of them will take action.
Well, they would if you weren't talking all over me. Jesus, so rude. Have you finished?
Yes, well, I've had a couple of points.
It's hard enough without someone blabbering all over my lines.
Tell me about it.
Now I've lost my place. And you can shut up too.
People listen to radio advertising. For the proof, go to commercialradio.com.au.
So I guess the insight there is about the idea that your messages can kind of cut through to people. even if they don't realise they're listening to the radio in the car, for instance, they're being given other mental images, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, engagement is the key word, really, at the moment for the industry, and there are some networks. ARN have got some engagement research which they're taking around at the moment as well, which is going down well. But the degree of engagement with radio is really what I love about the medium, because people are listening in their own personal space and to the station they've chosen. There's an intimacy with and a familiarity with the radio station, and that level of engagement allows advertisers to communicate some pretty strong messages and to have some effective results.
Yeah. So as a kind of radio champion, what do you think is the opportunity that digital radio is going to offer?
More targeting. I think that's key, because there'll be more niche stations, more flexibility within the within advertising schedules. For example, the length of ads, branded content. Program directors are going to be a little less precious about their programming, because they'll have more to fill. they need more material, and so there are opportunities for advertisers to get closer to the programming. Then there's the technical side, which is, you know, the screen. So we can broadcast a still image, ultimately three still images with every 30-second ad. There's a text component where you can run the call to action, for example, along the bottom of the screen during the ad, which frees up the content for the things that radio does best, which is creating the desire and the emotional benefit.
How is digital radio going?
Well, sales of the sets officially are at, just under 500,000, but the retailers themselves say that could be woefully underestimating the actual sales, because it doesn't include things like iPod docks and mini hi-fis, which have the DAB Plus as part of the component. So they think it's actually going to be twice as much as that. Listening on DAB is about 800,000. They're measuring
this is in any given week?
Yeah, or? This is
actually, I guess it would probably be per ratings period.
And they're surveying the platform that people listen, as opposed to the individual stations. It's too early to actually measure the individual stations. Time spent listening on digital is fantastic, and so I think that it's going well. It's tracking nicely.
Well, next, Loud and Clear, we discuss the Sirens finalists.
On Tuesday, the finalists were announced for this year's Commercial Radio Ad Awards, the Sirens. Clemenger BBDO Melbourne, Leo Burnett and the Brand Agency have the most nominations in the Best Campaign and Single Ad categories. Eardrum and Risk Sound are also in with a good chance in the Craft categories. Eardrum actually picked up an award with Droga 5 for VB Beers Tasting in round 5. Let's have a listen.
There you go.
Cheers, mate.
Nice.
Don't tell me. Is it a dry? No, it's a super dry. Some sort of super extra fusion of dryness. It's clean, it's crisp. Must be expensive. It's a sparkling, isn't it? A sparkling microbrew. Thurfeita?
It's a beer.
I like beer.
Taste some real beer. Get to a Celebrations now and grab a cold VB 15 pack for just $23.99. VB, the real beer.
Ralph, you've got a few in the mix for the annual awards. Any that really stood out as something different for you this year?
Either your own or somebody else's.
I like the there are a few campaigns. Well, of course, all the ones we're involved in, I love. But and the agencies have made some great, written some great scripts, and it's been a pleasure to work on many of them. The campaigns I thought which were challenging a little more and a little more pushing the boundaries a bit were, for example, the JWT Melbourne campaign for Vegemite, which was off the back of the how do you have your Vegemite if you're an edger or a tiger toaster or a dunker. And we made the series of ads which were sounding like more like YouTube clips where people would upload their song, their ode to Vegemite. And we could cast some pretty interesting characters for that. And really, it was just them singing about their love for Vegemite and the particular way they eat it. So they sounded very unusual on air. And there were some quirky little characters we involved.
Would you say there's a formula for a good radio ad? One criticism, perhaps, is that a lot of, for example, retailers are big spenders on radio, but they often get criticized for lacking an idea. Mm. What do you say the formula is for a good radio ad?
I think the formula really is about engagement and bringing the listener in the first 5 or 10 seconds and intriguing them and involving them. A lot of the advertising, radio advertising, suffers because it just lacks relevance. It's the assumption is that the listener is sitting there with pen and paper at hand, just wanting to decide what they're going to eat tonight, or and waiting for the radio ad to inform them. Mm-hmm. The truth is, listeners don't actually listen to radio ads; they listen to what interests them, and mm-hmm. sometimes that's a radio ad.
So you say basically the mood is important of the actual editorial environment, the show itself, that the ad has to fit in with the mood of the show.
I think so. I think that's important. But I think you just have to really understand the listener. We are interrupting their entertainment, and we have to come bearing gifts. We have to do something. We have to entertain or make it about them and draw the listener into the ad. And that's where I guess a lot of retail advertising suffers, because they just, you know, talk at you and assume that you're listening. And, you know, those campaigns work in spite of their creative a lot of the time. Right. The brand is mentioned a lot, and the jingle is heard, and you don't really know what's been said, but you are aware that it's a brand X or
yes.
brand Y
right.
that's
yeah.
talked at you.
Yes, yeah. So, Tim, are you a fan of radio ads in general? Or
I suppose the ones that I have the kind of problem with are the... those ones where it tries to be the slice of life, you know. Hello, Jane. Hi, Joan. I've got a problem. Well, that's funny because I've got a solution.
Yeah.
And we go back and forth a couple of times. And then the phone number. You've got a phone number, and then the number's repeated, and then everyone looks happy.
Wait, where are you going? I'm off to the... Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, there almost needs to be a criminal category in the sirens for the worst radio ads of the year.
Listeners should charge for bad ads. They should there should be a loading, I think, for poor creative. But yeah, I mean, lack of authenticity is a big problem with radio advertising. Because it's cheap to buy, cheap to make, it's often treated cheaply. So not much time is spent in the studio, not much time is spent casting. They cast voices instead of actors. And that's when you get that performance where, you know, everyone's sing-songy, or the women are ludicrously happy about everything, the smiley, you know, impossibly happy people are on every ad, and that's just not real life, particularly for a medium that's so intimate. We can spot these fakes a mile off.
Now, one other, I guess we could call it a stunt, I suppose, that you've been involved in recently, slightly cheeky, is the work you've done for Strepsils.
That's right. Well, the campaign is all about treating early and treating at the first signs of a sore throat. And we're always trying to come up with different ways and new ways of using the medium, and I guess challenging the conventions of the 30-second recorded spot in a studio. And one of the ideas that was that we came up with, which got up and we've just finished, is a slightly more guerrilla tactic, where we had, as well as the radio ads that we're talking about, treating at the first signs of a sore throat and the initial tickle, we cast a series of actors to call up Sydney radio stations over the last couple of weeks and be involved in whatever the talkback subject was, or call up with a, you know, spotting a traffic accident or something. And they would do that legitimately. They would be involved with the with the program. But during the course of the conversation, they'd apologize, having a little tickle, say they needed to take a Strepsil.
Well, let's hear a clip.
Let us hope she knows more about climate than she does about grammar. Hiya, Gary.
Hey, mate, how are you?
Excellent, thank you.
I'm out in Blacktown, mate, and there's been a couple of, I don't know if any of your listeners out here know about it, there's been a couple of break-ins in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
If anyone else in the Blacktown area has anything to say on it, and why we don't hear about these crime things in the paper...
Oh, that's a good question. As a matter of fact, there are murders that occur in this city that are placed on page 10 of some newspapers.
Ridiculous. Oh, sorry, mate, I've got a sore throat coming on. Sorry, mate, I'll have to have a Strepsil or something.
You're right. You're with us, Gary?
Yeah, I'm back with you, mate.
Okay.
I just wanted to make that point with you, mate.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, all right. Have a good one.
All right. Get your throat better.
Stephen, are you there? Hello.
Yes, Stephen.
How are you going, man?
Good, thank you.
Listen, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Listen, I just want to get your thoughts on the state election.
Yeah.
It seems a bit of a... Excuse me.
Yeah.
Now, just...
You better?
Strips.
Okay. You all right there?
A sore throat coming on.
Yeah.
Always take the strips off the first time of the sore throat.
Sure.
Just wanted to... Yeah, it seems a bit of an openish. Okay, do you think Labor have any chance?
I think it's pretty much a lay-down mazair.
I'm not pushing any cause. I've caught the train recently, and you know we all know what a mess that is.
You were lucky to catch it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mate, you better take some strepsils or something, and get rid of that cough because you don't sound too good.
How many times did you get people on air?
We've got about, I think we've got 8 or 10 in total, yeah. And there were a few highlights there, a few star names.
And the thing is, it's quite risk-taking, isn't it?
Well, it is, and, you know, there probably isn't enough of that going on, really, in radio. As you said before, it's not really seen as the glamour medium, so people tend to think, well, let's take risks in some of the other big media where millions of people will hear about it and can juries will applaud and... You know.
Did anyone twig? Did anyone realise what was happening?
No, I mean as you heard there, they were all. I guess it was unexpected. The references were subtle enough, and the actors were good enough to be able to convey that that sense of, well, he wouldn't be continuing the conversation about the crime rates in Des Moines if he wasn't real, you know, and they let it go. In fact, as you heard, some of them referenced it.
Yeah, so which was your favourite gotcha of the lot?
Oh, it's got to be Lawsy, doesn't it? I think the irony.
The golden tonsils.
The golden tonsils, and not a hint of cash for questions because obviously he had no idea. That was quite funny.
Next, CE Go, PR agency's management reshuffle.
The last few days have seen an unprecedented number of changes in leadership at Australia's PR agencies, with several CEO departures and arrivals. We've had Walter Jennings departing Omnicom's Fleischmann Hillard and being replaced by Chris Newman, alongside the agency being put under the management of sister ad agency Wybin TBWA. WPP's Hillen Knowlton saw its CEO, Marcus Warner, depart after just 18 months in charge, with Sue Cook appointed as acting MD. And Acumen Republic has seen CEO Michael Dunlop make way for Karen Arkell. And this week it emerged that the Red Agency's CEO, Neil Travers, has departed and is being replaced by the UK's James Wright. So, Robin, there has been a lot of movement, all of this in the last 7 days. Bit of an industry refreshment in the PR world, and another generation coming through, or slightly more coincidental, do you think?
Well, it struck me as immediately being coincidental. But yeah, I mean, could it be a case of PR agencies getting their bad news out all at once, so that once one MD fell, they thought, well, hey, you know, a good PR tactic, we'll get all of the bad news out of the way, you know, at once.
Taking the trash out, as
yes.
I believe the slightly American spin doctor term is. Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me. But certainly, yeah, I can't remember a time in recent years when there's been as much wholesale change going on. Funny enough, I was talking to the boss of an independent PR agency who was absolutely glorying in it because, you know, it's all good for him because, you know, instability means that, you know, they're not going to be coming after his clients, for instance.
Would you say it is a sign of the times? Would you say that the industry is in need of a refresh?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, to me, it feels like a moment that for a lot of the big consumer PR agencies, they need to get closer to advertising agencies. Some of them have got sister agencies, which is where it's interesting that we're seeing Fleischmann come under the management wing of Wybin's, and also Wybin's launch a second agency brand as well in 11, which you wrote about, God, only about 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
So that sort of suggests to me that there's something going on. And to me, I've been seeing it from the point of view that advertising agencies actually need to understand PR better. You know, there are some big ideas which could be multiplied a lot more if only they used the free media component, you know, the or earned media, whatever catchphrase you want to use. But seeing it from the other point of view, you know, perhaps the PR agencies need the advertising agencies. But
doesn't that strike you in that sort of evolution of PR? Doesn't it strike you as a step backwards that now PR agencies that are increasingly becoming more independent and forces in their own right now have to report into advertising agencies? Isn't that going backwards?
I mean, I don't know what the answer will be, whether actually the answer is a going back to the ultimate full service agency where you rebundle not just media and advertising, but I'm not sure PR ever really truly sat in it. But you know, at some point I'm sure it will. Again, this week I was talking to yet another PR agency boss, not the first one who was glorying in his competitor's misery, who was actually saying what she thought would be really interesting would be to see the first media agency that really got serious about PR as a component that sits alongside. Ralph, what do you think? I mean, we were talking earlier. I mean, the Strepsils thing is a classic case of something that's probably very PR-able. You know, that was, you know, arguably that, you know, that was a push into the earned media space.
Yeah, we are pretty crap at PR, personally. At Eardrop, we just don't have the time. It seems to really, I mean, every week we're thinking, oh, this would be great. We've got to get this out and do something. And then another week goes by and we just haven't done anything about it. We think we should, but for a campaign like that, that would be perfect. But instead we've, you know, given the scoop here live.
Well, and fortunately we'll be able to help out with that one, I'm sure. Next, Shameless Philadelphia.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all these stories, go to mumbrella.com.au. Philadelphia Cream Cheese has launched a new campaign with the help of JWT Melbourne, encouraging women to stop feeling guilty when they eat creamy food. Let's have a listen.
Oh my, I'm eating a creamy carbonara. Thank you, Philadelphia. Julianne, take a memo. I feel no shame. I am shameless. Cheesecake? Is that a light, creamy Philly bruschetta? I prefer my salad, tossed. My sisters love your creamy food and love it shamelessly.
A craft exec, the maker of Philly, was quoted as saying, "We believe that most women can relate to the old adage, moment on the lips, lifetime on the hips." It seems that most food advertising is centered around weight and health. Tim, do you think it promotes a healthy body image or unhealthy eating?
This ad is seriously messed up. I've got to admit, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It was one of those ones, I think it was you who wrote the story originally, so it was probably half an hour after you posted it before I got round to expecting to see something. And it's, I'm not sure this encourages healthy eating at all. I think this encourages a very freaky, odd attitude to food altogether. So strategically, I have a problem with it. I think it's really well written and really well made and very entertaining and very funny. And I love the line, "I prefer my salad tossed." I think all of that's great. But yeah, I noticed on the comment stream that particularly from some women, that there is something of a resistance to it.
Yeah, the line you just mentioned, "I prefer my salad tossed," before she throws the salad over her shoulder, reminds me of the KFC ad. And I'm not saying that Philadelphia is as bad for you as KFC burgers, but it was bland food versus exciting food sort of thing. And I'm not sure whether that's the way forward or it does the brand any favours.
Well, it's a territory that Philadelphia have been, you know, in for a while. It's this sort of the secret little pleasure and naughty, you know, something a little extra. So I think it's consistent with the brand. But when you eat something shamelessly, it's like it takes it to another level. It's sort of like eating a lot and often. So yeah, I think it's the ad itself entertained me. There is, as I said, a touch of the blackcurrant tangos about it with the dancing and the Lipton.
The blackcurrant tango, when you think of that classic BBH ad from the UK, it starts off with the kind of boss reading out a letter from, I think, a French exchange student and then marching through the office.
And then it builds, and there's the triumphant piece at the end, and it probably a helicopter as well, which was the bit that confused me in this one.
I remember Harrier jump jet. On the cliffs of Dover. I might try and dig it out, and on the website we'll stick it up with the podcast.
But it had the same sort of sense of fun, and it was over the top, and there seems to be a lot of song and dance on TV advertising at the moment, which is great. Bring it on.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it strikes me that this ad is one of a number that seems of potentially unhealthy foods that are saying, well, we don't care. This is a fun product. Eat us. It's part of the spirit of the brand. Next, Mumbrella's new ad agency project.
Are you spending what they're spending? Visit advertise.ebay.com.au to find out. So we announced this week that our Mumbrella 360 conference, which takes place in June, one of the things we'll be doing is revealing the results of a major research project that we're about to undertake, examining advertising agencies' performance. Now, Robin, this particular hot potato has landed in your lap, study of Australia's top 25 agencies. And well, I think we're avoiding the word ranking, but it's an attempt to assess them by a number of criteria. It's probably worth trying to give a sense of how we're going to try and go about it.
Yeah, well there are two bits to it. We're consulting with a number of pitch doctors and industry experts and consultants about, firstly, the top 25, who they are and why they should be in the list. We're basing that predominantly on size. Obviously, there are no media billings that we can use to gauge size, so we'll probably go by staff numbers. There will be the grey areas, the outliers. Right, so there's obviously a top 20 we can fairly easily put together.
But yeah,
there's a few agencies we'll have to go on. We're still deciding how to choose those agencies.
Because I think that's the thing, nobody will argue with the top 15 or top 18. It's those ones who just make it in or just miss out that will be controversial, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. So running, we're going to bounce those. We're coming up with a provisional list. We're going to bounce that list off industry experts and see what they think. The next bit is, again, consulting with industry experts about what defines a successful creative agencies. Now, there are loads of different factors we can use, obviously creative, effectiveness, planning, and so on. There are a number of grey areas that will be tough, but we're going to have a go. Commercial success, that might be one we'll try and look at measuring, but we understand that some agencies may not want to play ball on that. Sarbanes-Oxley will be a hurdle as well. But yeah, other factors such as the contribution to the industry itself would be interesting. And perhaps, I know you guys have thoughts on how that could be measured. The impact of, say, an agency like Leo Burnett, such as Earth Hour, an idea that has impact beyond the industry itself. And also creativity is difficult to measure, but we're thinking of toying with a few ideas of how perhaps getting an agency to submit its best work and then perhaps getting a panel of marketers in to rank that work and say which work they think's best. And we're even toying with the idea of getting the public in a focus group and take a look at an agency reel and see what they think.
Now, Ralph, you work with lots of ad agencies, obviously. Mm. What do you think makes a good ad agency?
I guess it's the degree to which they care. And that can vary. From my perspective, there's a huge difference between the way some agencies care about radio, for example, compared to others. But you can also tell when a creative director or an ECD gets involved in a project and it isn't necessarily the biggest, most expensive TV campaign that the agency has made. But there's just a degree, there's an attitude where everything that we do has to be great and it has to work. And it's about relevant cleverness. That's the key for me. And sometimes you can see that in a creative and from the junior through to the most experienced creative director.
That's a really good phrase. Relevant cleverness. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's something that I nicked actually.
All the best ones.
Yeah. But it's really just finding that nugget of truth within the product that you can expand upon. But it's so easy to leave that product, because on TV you can show the product. So once it's there, there's a temptation to do pretty much anything because you can. As long as the product's there and it's involved, then really the actual storyline doesn't necessarily have to be about consuming it or the benefit of consuming it. Where with radio, you can't see the product, and it's very critical that it has to be relevant. It has to be about actually taking the product. Otherwise, you end up with a sponsored gag. You know, the product features 5 seconds at the end in a voiceover, and the rest of the ad is about, you know, having a cup of tea on the moon, who knows what. But so relevant cleverness is, you know, finding that nugget of truth and concentrating in that area, coming up with a great idea within that very defined area. And that's about briefing, really.
Well, next, the TV networks get ready for the second half of the ratings year.
This is the time of the year, just before Easter, that we see an influx of press releases in our inboxes announcing a return or introduction of a show from the TV networks. The end of next week will signal a 2-week Easter break from the official ratings period before Battle resumes in May. Among the shows being promoted at 7, you've got the return of Dancing with the Stars, Australia's Got Talent and Beauty and the Geek, Australia, as well as the new US crime drama Detroit 187. 9's got The Block and Another Underbelly, while MasterChef on 10 returns on May the 1st, the same night as the Logies TV Awards. So Tim, My Kitchen Rules has been a bit of a hit for 7 this season. Do you think MasterChef will continue to pull the crowds?
Yeah, it's a crunch, and the first early crunch will be how the first episode goes, because as you nod towards it, launches on the same night that the Logies goes out. Now, obviously very popular, but I suspect that the sort of people who like event TV are exactly the sort of people who feel a bit conflicted on whether to watch the Logies or MasterChef. Now, if I was going to choose which one of the two to record and which one to watch live or as live, I would probably choose the Logies, because that's the one that has got that live feel to it. So I wouldn't be surprised if certainly MasterChef isn't quite as good as previous year, as certainly as last year's opening, but equally I bet it hurts the Logies too. So it's going to go both directions, and I think 7 would be smart just to stay out of the way and schedule something very, very alternative. And then just the other show, just to mention as one to look out for, I think, in sort of not that far away, would be The Renovators, which is 10's big thing. You know, the word is, you know, production team of more than 100, which is big for an Australian show. So not much has come out on that one yet, but I think that will be quite big as well.
MasterChef, I hear it's been refreshed. The format's been refreshed somewhat. What do you think it'll take to pull in the same sort of audiences that we've seen previously?
I think one of the issues is that this year, My Kitchen Rules and 7 hit its groove second time round. And one of the ways that it hit its groove was by borrowing a lot from MasterChef, you know, step away from the benches and all of that sort of thing. So the question is, will the audience have been a little bit burnt out as a result of having just sat through, you know, effectively certainly quarter of a year and a little bit more of My Kitchen Rules? Are they ready to dive straight back into more of the same? That's going to be the question.
Yeah. What do you think? Why is it that Australian audiences love cookery shows so much? Ralph, any ideas?
I wouldn't have a clue. I'm a stranger to the kitchen, and I'm a stranger to the show. I mean, I appreciate it. It does very well, and how I've seen it evolve with the sort of the added drama, and the temptation for them would be that it continues to push that, and ultimately, you know, it'll jump the shark and it'll be too crazy. But yeah, the fixation with cooking programs, it's beyond me. Sorry.
What's your favorite show, for example?
I tend to watch more comedy-based programming. Modern Family is, you know, a regular favorite for us, and then a lot of the HBO stuff, the fantastic drama.
Yes, finally, Boardwalk Empire has just come along, hasn't it? I must confess, it's sitting on my Foxtel IQ, and we're probably two episodes in already, and I've not had a chance to catch it yet. But finally, that's arrived in Australia.
I'm looking forward to seeing that too, and seeing how that compares with Razor, you know, yes. The Underbelly, because it's a similar period, similar.
That's a really interesting point, actually. Yeah, it would be give or take, wouldn't it? Because Razor, I guess, is what, the 20s? And maybe Boardwalk Empire is the 30s? Sort of Prohibition era, isn't it?
Yes, similar haircuts.
Yes, very similar haircuts. So looking at the... I suspect that the investment in sets might be quite different.
That's right. That'll be, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, because it's a big production for Australia. That sort of period piece it will be fascinating. And I think, yeah, fingers crossed.
And Robin, anything you're looking out for?
Well, yeah, as Ralph mentioned, I'm not a Family Guy fan. and I don't spend an awful lot of time watching TV. But yeah, I'm just fascinated what the appeal is for MasterChef, so I shall be watching that.
And also worth noting that next week, if you include Go alongside Nine, there'll be 15 episodes of The Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
Which clearly isn't enough. That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Eardrum's creative director, Ralph Van Dyke.
You're welcome, Tim.
To my co-host, Robin Hicks.
Cheers, Tim.
And to CBS Interactive for use of their studios. Production was by Alice Terlikovsky. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.